Welcome to episode 395 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms.
Richard, you know what I just realized?
What did you just realize?
We're five episodes away from 400.
Yeah, we kind of are. Are we celebrating? I mean, do we need to celebrate?
I don't know. I kind of feel about episode 400 the way I feel about Valentine's Day, which is...
don't feel like you need to celebrate it on my account.
I don't know. That's actually not true. I care more about episode 400 than I do Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. I hope Jen isn't in hearing distance.
No, Jen thinks Valentine's Day is pretty dumb too. I mean, it's not as dumb as Sweetest Day, but neither of us are huge fans of Valentine's Day. Anyway, no one wants to hear about sappy made-up holidays. Let's move on to some listener feedback this week. We got two messages. They were both sent into our inbox via entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. The first one is from John, and I love these types of messages, Richard. He had an answer for one of our other listeners. Last week, we read a message that was asking, what the heck is this guy supposed to do with all of his 3D Blu-rays? Like, he's not going to have a TV right now and all this stuff. And like, what's he going to do with his 3D Blu-rays? And John says, rip them to MP4 or MKV. A lot of VR, virtual reality movie viewers let you watch 3D content, both side by side and the over under vision options. And the resolution of headsets are only going to get better in the next few years. Richard, I kind of pay attention to all of these VR things, but I had no idea that any of these VR headsets were capable of playing 3D movies in 3D.
I don't know why I didn't assume that. I mean, I've talked about VR almost always with the assumption that the content is 3D because the infrastructure is there to do that. Even though some VR is not technically 3D. I think this is brilliant. I love this. Of course, this means you're going to have that thing on your head for 2.5 hours or 3.5 if you're watching The Hobbit. But this is a great idea. This is a really cool idea and suggests that, you know, maybe even in the future, there may be some other options for repurposing or further accessing that 3D content. See, I just assumed that the 3D content not going to be worthwhile anymore. And we didn't even cover this, but Sony and LG are now out of the 3D game.
I thought we did mention that.
Well, did we cover that, or did we cover that only LG was still making 3D TVs and now they're both officially out? So
Yeah. And just to be super clear, because I think when most people think VR headsets, they think you slap it on your face and you move your head all over the place and you're looking in that direction. And that's not what we're talking about here. How I'm sure that this works, although I haven't actually seen it myself, is basically the same way that the 3D glasses worked with your 3D TV. And that is that the 3D glasses that you wore, especially the active shutter glasses, would essentially make it so that each eye would see a different thing, like basically out of phase with each other. And that's how you would perceive the depth. So because VR goggles are two screens, one for each eye, they can do that. Whereas looking at your computer monitor doesn't work that way, right?
Yeah, it's really kind of clever. It's like the whole screen equivalent of de-interlacing. What would you call that? Deframing? Basically,
that's exactly what it is.
Basically, splitting every other frame out to be in the correct eye. Very cool. Yeah,
I love it. Thank you, John, for like breaking our minds with that awesome idea.
You broke our minds. All right. Well, I have a message from Don. Don says, hi, I've been a longtime listener and a fan of your podcast, and I have a question about the new Xbox One S I just bought. Hey, We did too. Mm-hmm. I upgraded it primarily because it's supposed to play the 4K version of some Blu-rays, and I noticed that the playback was terrible. I got a new LG 65-inch 4K TV. Aw, I have size envy there. For Christmas, so I decided I needed a Blu-ray player too. So I found out that the 4K players were around $200, and a new Xbox One wasn't much more, so I went that route and bought one. Now I am regretting it. Do you have any hints or ideas, or do you think Microsoft will fix this in a firmware upgrade? So, obviously, that wasn't quite enough for us to go on in terms of what exactly he needed. So, Josh reached out and got some more information, and Don clarified that the issue he's seeing is that the Ultra HD Blu-ray plays for a few seconds, then it gets all blocky and artifacty, like it can't keep up with the content. Then it plays a few seconds and then it repeats. Like, it's just constantly having this problem. Not that the video repeats, but this cycle of playing some and then playing blocky and then playing some and then playing blocky. I don't know what your thought on this is, but I'm going back to my go-to answer for one of last week's questions, which is that I think this could be an HDMI problem.
It could be.
This sounds very much like an HDMI problem.
Yeah, it absolutely could be. We don't know the specific LG TV that he has. So I wasn't exactly like scouring Reddit or AVS forums or something like that for it, but it could be absolutely an HDMI problem. You might want to go grab one of those certified premium HDMI cables for Monoprice through Amazon, like I was talking about last week. Don't worry, it's not like you're paying monster cable prices here. I think I paid like $6 or $7 for mine. You could try that. And it could be a firmware issue. But you know, that's kind of the really nice thing about the Xbox, is that it does receive frequent system updates and frequent app updates. And the Blu-ray player on the Xbox One S, it's just an app. So it does receive app updates fairly frequently.
Yes, it's just an app that you actually have to download still, which makes me insane.
Yeah. Well, one other idea. All of these TVs have a whole bunch of HDMI inputs, but they're not all the same usually. So, you know, one of them is usually labeled like best or something like that. Make sure you've got your Xbox One S plugged into the best HDMI port on your TV also. Or if you're going through a receiver, maybe your receiver doesn't support the higher bit rates that these things all do. It could be any one of those things. So try and look at all of those things and definitely order yourself one or a few of those certified premium HDMI cables.
Yeah, so really good point. If you are going through a receiver and then to your television, I would recommend changing that for the Xbox. I would recommend going from the Xbox to one of your HDMI inputs and setting up your television and your receiver so that your receiver gets audio through the audio return channel in HDMI.
I'm not sure that I would recommend that. that's how I had mine set up at first. And I had weird issues, and I don't know. I didn't really have a great way of figuring out what the problem was in my setup. But when I was going that route frequently, my daughter would be the first one to turn on the Xbox and the TV and the receiver and all that in the morning, and she would have no audio. And I would have to like go in and mess with the audio settings in the Xbox for it to work correctly. And when I stopped using audio return channel and just, you know, well, you know, I tried it a couple of different ways, whether it was straight through my receiver or going into the HDMI input on the TV, but then using optical audio out from the TV to my receiver. I haven't had any issues with either of those routes. So,
okay, all right. That's another option too. Sure.
I guess the bad news is that there could be a lot of different reasons for this, but the good news is that we've got a lot of potential things that could fix it. Is that good news?
Yeah. I think it is. I do want to add in there that I also had some weird problems. I have played 3 Ultra HD discs, and each of them, the first time that I played them, would not actually play. Like, they would either leave me on a blank screen, or they would pause partway through some of the preloader stuff and not even get to the studio card. So I don't know if this is related to that. I don't know if it's just indicative that this is the first time this player has had to support these type of discs, and it could be having some problems. And hopefully they will be coming up with some updates. I know that my problem is not household ready. Like, I can't go on a trip and expect that everyone's going to slip a disc in there and be okay with the fact that it doesn't play the first time. That will not work in most households.
No, that's not going to meet what we call the family acceptance factor.
Yep. So, exactly.
There's one more solution here. And that is, I love this because Don has given us the best segue ever. Ditch the whole Xbox and build yourself a home theater PC.
Oh, wow. I did not see that coming.
I don't actually recommend this, but it's now an option, Richard, because starting next month, the first consumer Ultra HD Blu-ray drives will be shipping for computers, and they're coming from Pioneer, of all companies.
You know, I want one.
This is kind of cool. Like, I saw this and thought, ooh, I want one of these. I want to be able to rip all of my 4K Blu-rays now.
Well, if anybody figures that out, right? I mean, so far, that's not possible. But if we see that we could get to a point where these could be stored on a server, oh, geez, I think my Blu-rays take a lot of space. But if we get to the point that we could have MKVs or other formats that would support the 4K video and maybe not take, I don't know, like 200 gig per movie, then this would be really cool.
Well, they're not going to be that big. And you've got the benefits of H.265 video compression now. So I believe when I was reading about H.265 a long time ago, they were basically saying that you could take 4K resolution stuff and compress it down to about the size of uncompressed 1080p. So even if a native 4K stream would be 75 gigs or something like that, then maybe the H.265 version of it, which you would barely be able to tell the difference in, might only be 40 gigs, 35 gigs. So there's possibilities there. And Richard, disk space keeps getting cheaper.
That's true. And you know me, I'm not compressing. I'm not compressing my 4K video. It's not happening. No. I'm actually re-ripping old stuff that I had previously compressed because I'm like, storage is cheap. I don't want those artifacts.
Especially not on a 4K TV. Okay, so back to this drive, though. There are some good things about it. The first one is it comes with a copy of CyberLink Power DVD that will be capable of playing those 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray disc. So that's really good. You'll have a way of watching them. But there are a couple of caveats here, and these are going to sound really familiar if you remember our Netflix story from a few weeks ago. In order to play all of this stuff back, there's DRM on this stuff, guys, and other issues. And so to be able to do this, you're going to need a 7th generation Kaby Lake Intel processor. You're going to need Windows 10. Your video card is going to have to support HDMI 2.0a. It's going to have to support HDCP 2.2. Your display is going to have to be HDCP 2.2. So you're going to have a lot of expensive new stuff required to make this work. And if you thought that maybe because internal Blu-ray drives are like $30 now that this might be cheap, no, it's not. These things are going to start at $200 just for the drive.
That is better than I thought.
It is, yeah, it actually is better than I thought it would be. I thought it would be more like $300 to $400.
Yeah, that's exactly where I thought it was going to come in. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we don't know exactly when they're going to be available here in the U.S., but that's what we're looking at. And I'm not going to be rushing out to buy one of these. I don't have the system to do all of this, but I'm excited to see that it's finally becoming available. And hopefully, you know, within the next year or so, all of this stuff will be a little bit easier to consume and the ripping process will have been figured out and I'll be able to just throw all this stuff on my Plex server, hopefully.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, if you want 4K video, you may want to watch it on Amazon Video. And
you might.
Amazon Video on the Xbox One is getting an upgrade. You may already have it.
I do. I used it tonight.
All right.
I don't think it supports 4K yet.
You have to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. I know. So I got an email about this update from Amazon today and read through it, and they didn't say a lot. They mentioned some parental controls are different and stuff. They never mentioned 4K in that message at all.
That's true.
So I got a little nervous. So I got home, fired up the Xbox, opened up the app. It was already updated on my box, which is cool. And I went straight to like Man in the High Castle, stuff like that, that I'm pretty sure is available in 4K. And it didn't say 4K. So I still don't think this app supports 4K on the
That's
Xbox One.
Crazy. That's absolutely crazy. I don't know what would be going on there because this is the version of the app that allows the playback of 4K video on other platforms. This is the version that it has been rolled out to my LG TV, for example. So I'm really surprised to hear this. Well, nonetheless, all right, so forget what I said about 4K. If you still want to watch Amazon Video, this app has a couple of pretty good improvements. So, you know, if it's the same experience, and I haven't seen it yet myself, but if it's the same experience that they're rolling out elsewhere, the whole side-scrolling metaphor of Amazon Video in the past is gone. Instead, this looks a lot more like the experience that you had on the Fire TV, where you have a menu of primary navigation on the left-hand side, and then a bunch of recommendation tiles in basically strips that scroll, but in a vertical scrolling list of those strips, not unlike what you might see on Netflix. And then you can select from either the tiles, or if you go down into one of the menu items on the left-hand side, it takes you to a different page that then gives you, for example, all of the genres or all of the TV shows or all of the things that are recommended for you. So they've really improved the interface. I like it a lot better than what it was. What's odd is that I don't like it better than the original Fire TV.
So I don't have any experience with the Fire TV, new or old, or any of that stuff. This interface, it definitely seems better to use. It seems easier to find things. I didn't spend a ton of time with it. I was basically just trying to find out if it had 4K. The one thing that I did notice is as you're kind of scrolling through things, this isn't 60 frames per second. Like, there's a little bit of lag there.
Yeah.
It's not a super smooth experience.
Yeah, and so that's pretty common for them. And I suspect that has to do with the fact that they're very likely using some app translation layer that they're able to roll out to all these different platforms.
Well, it ought to be better than this. It's running on a friggin' Xbox, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. Now, they did add some other capabilities, like the ability to purchase and rent stuff directly from the console, which previously the Xbox devices did not support. So that's a nice new capability. They also have parental controls, but they're no longer in the app. So a while ago, Amazon started moving the parental controls to the web. So you would go to Amazon.com and set parental controls and then decide which devices those controls apply to. And that's how this app will work now. You don't actually set it up in the app. You set up your PIN and the controls in the Amazon.com security settings or parental settings, and then apply them to the devices that you want to have, where you want them engaged.
Okay. And what about our faithful listeners who are still on Xbox 360s?
Doesn't apply. None of what we said applies to you at all.
Alrighty, so we will move on. Richard, we've talked frequently about PlayOn's products over the years. And we've mentioned their newest offering is a product called PlayOn Cloud. It's a product that allows you to record streaming video, but instead of doing it on your PC and storing it all on your PC and all that stuff, it all happens in the cloud, and you can download the video straight to your mobile devices.
Yeah.
You've tried this. How's it working out?
Yeah, it's a pretty cool service. I like it. And I also like the fact that I got my credits for recordings at a discounted price. So we've talked about the pricing for this before, and we've talked about how we don't really like the pricing, which is $1 per recording. So if you're recording a half an hour comedy, which is really 23 minutes after they strip out the commercials, then you're paying $1 for that. If you're recording a three-hour movie from HBO Now, it's $1. So it's a really weird pricing model, but I think that the price is a little bit high for the average use. We'll have to see how that works for them. Then the other thing, though, is that this is, while it's called PlayOn, entirely unrelated to your PlayOn server, your PlayOn desktop, and anything else that you have running on your current tablet called PlayOn. PlayOn Cloud is a completely separate application with, as best I can tell, completely separate backend infrastructure. So what this means is, if you're already a PlayOn user, this doesn't integrate with that in any way. And as a PlayOn user, I find that to be problematic because I can record things on the service, but then they're not available on the desktop app after I've recorded them. They don't show up in the recordings because the desktop app has no awareness of what you're doing in PlayOn Cloud. None whatsoever. They don't show up in the PlayOn app on the same mobile device. They don't show up there. And there's really no reason why they couldn't, because they are unrestricted video copies. And how do I know that? I know that because when you record these, you also, when the recording is complete, receive an email message telling you that the recording is complete. And in that email message, you get a link that you can click that takes you to a web page that has a button that you can then click to download the MP4 that it recorded to your desktop. And it's configured in such a way that it's just basic download. So then you have this MP4 file in your downloads folder that you have to move somewhere, like maybe to your server. It's really cumbersome. The process of actually getting the files that are readily viewable is just really cumbersome on the desktop. And the way that I'm using it is, here's a PlayOn recording that didn't work for me, or here is a recording that my DVR missed. So I want to record that before it goes away, and I'll throw it out on my server with everything else I've recorded. So I'm having to go through extra steps to make that happen. And I feel like a really good feature would be for them to figure out how to integrate these two products a little bit better than they are. I get that it's different backend infrastructure, but it's using the same account. So in theory, they should be able to figure out a way to connect these for people who use both. And I suspect, because they promoted this product very heavily to their current mailing list, that there are a fair number of those type of users.
Yes, maybe. I don't know. I mean, this whole thing seems very much targeted at just throw this on your mobile device.
It is, but I don't know how they get to those users. I don't think they have those ears yet.
Maybe, maybe not.
So we'll have to see how that goes. I don't want to diss this because I think it's a really good start and I think it has a lot of potential. The other thing you need to be aware of is that the content that's available to you is more limited than the vast array of channels that you can access through your own PlayOn server. So if you run a PlayOn server, you have pretty much access to anything out there that it can scrape, anything at all. Most all of the networks, certainly over the air, some of the cable networks, many of the premium networks, including HBO and Showtime. On PlayOn Cloud, the only premium network that you have access to is HBO Now. Oh, which, by the way, isn't the network, because that's the service that you buy if you don't have HBO service. If you have HBO service, you have access to HBO Go, which is not available. And Showtime, not available. So the selection that you have is going to be far more limited than the vast selection that you have on PlayOn. That's something to be aware of too. Now, you're not paying anything for the app. So you could download the app, set up your account, and ultimately decide not to use it, and it won't cost you anything. But it just some things that you should probably be aware of going into it. All of this said, I have watched a number of recordings that I've been very happy with. The recording quality is their HD quality, which I believe is 720p, and the videos have been smooth and far less problematic than anything that I might be trying to record on my own computer, which typically ends up with hiccups because either I've been logged out of the service and I have to re-log back in before it'll work, or because I'm having something else going on the computer and so it's skipping every once in a while. So this just eliminates all of that problem and gives you a recording that's done. If you have any problems with it, you can get in touch with them and they'll credit you so you can record it again.
Cool. All right, so we've got some big creators update stuff coming to Windows 10 and the Xbox, and they've also, they being Microsoft, have made a big change to how the Insider program is going to work on the Xbox. So let's dig into that first before we get into the weirdness of these updates. So first off, they're splitting this up in a way that I don't think could possibly be more complicated, especially for Microsoft.
I agree.
So the first part is actually good news, and that is now anybody will be able to become an Xbox Insider. In the past, like, I mean, they had all but shut down invitations to the Xbox Insider program a few months ago. Now anybody's going to be able to get in, but the way that it's going to work now is there will be four rings, essentially. You know, if you're familiar with the Insider program on Windows 10, you've got Fast Ring, Slow Ring, Release Preview Ring. I think that's all of them. I don't know. I can't keep all this stuff straight in my head anymore. And on the PC, you know, Fast Ring means you're getting updates fairly frequently. Slow Ring is obviously less frequent. You're not getting every single update. You're getting more stable ones. And then Release Preview, you're hardly ever getting them. It's just when they're about ready to roll out the next big version. Similar thing now on the Xbox One. But there's four rings. The most frequent one is called Preview Alpha. And they're talking that you could be receiving 2 to 3 updates a week in the Preview Alpha phase. Preview Beta is 1 to 2 updates a week. Preview Ring 3, yep, they switched from words to numbers here, 2 to 3 updates a month. And then Preview Ring 4 is the slowest one, roughly 1 update a month. Now, just in case you're freaking out about the idea of getting 3 updates a week on your Xbox, they made it sound like that's not going to be the norm, but as you're getting closer to a big release, they're going to be shipping out tons of them to try to iron out all the bugs. So it's probably not going to be 2 to 3 updates a week every single week, but as you get closer to release of something, it will be even more frequent updates. Now, you don't just get to choose which ring you want to be in either. You know, on Windows 10, you get complete freedom to choose how often you want these things. On the Xbox, it's kind of a pay-to-play sort of scenario here, although you don't have to pay. The way that you pay them is by giving them feedback. They need your feedback. Like, that's what these programs are here for. It's not for you to get early access at software that's probably buggy, and then for you to just complain about it on Twitter. That doesn't help anybody, right? It doesn't help anybody. So the way that you'll be able to access these more frequent update rings is by giving them feedback. And there's a bunch of ways you can do that. There's the biggest one and the most important one is to use the Xbox Insider Hub app. There's surveys on there. There's options for filing a bug. Like, there's a lot of options there. And there's other things too, like just using your Xbox a lot is also going to factor into what updates or what rings you can get into here. Also, are you signing up and participating in game betas? Like, there's a beta this weekend of the game called For Honor. It's coming out this weekend. I'll be playing it. I play most of these betas. If you're doing that, they track all of those metrics. And if you're a big time user of your Xbox plus someone who's given them lots of feedback on what's going on, you're going to get access to these higher rings. Now, if you are someone who provides tons of feedback and uses your Xbox 10 hours a day and plays all the betas, but you really don't like the idea of getting three updates a week, you don't have to go to the alpha ring. You can choose. You just are only going to be able to choose the rings that they make available to you. So don't worry if you don't want updates that frequently, but just, you know, maybe you want the 2 to 3 updates a month sort of ring, but you qualify for alpha, that's okay. You can still pick preview ring 3 and get the few updates a month that you want instead of, you know, every time you turn your Xbox on, get in a new update. Does that make sense, Richard? Do you like this idea?
Yeah, I actually do. I don't like the naming, but, you know, not Microsoft's forte. But I like that they're actually making you earn your way into faster updates. That makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. Okay, so let's get into what these updates are and when you're going to be able to get them and what you're going to get on the different machines and all that stuff. Because we are finally expecting this stuff. So here's the thing. We talked about a lot of this last week. And when we recorded last week, we said, you're probably going to have this stuff on your Xbox by the time you're hearing that podcast, that episode 394. Because they had posted to Xbox's news site the previous Friday and said, we're releasing this next week. And then they didn't. It didn't actually come out until this week. It was about a week and a half after that original news posting before anybody got this. And they also mentioned when they rolled that out that not everybody who's in the Insider Preview program was going to get it right away, that they were going to kind of slow roll this out. And, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday. I believe people started getting this on Monday. I still haven't gotten it. I don't know when the heck I'm going to get it. Probably like right before I'm about to sit down to finally get to play something on Friday. Who knows? So what is coming? Well, you know, most of the stuff that we talked about last week, so I'm not going to go into all of those features, but we did learn a few more details in the last few days. We talked about what the new guide looks like last week and how it works. What we didn't know last week is that through implementing this new guide, which they're doing to say that, you know, this is one of the primary ways that we're going to improve multitasking.
And to be clear, we're not talking about the one guide.
Not the one guide, right. Not the TV guide listing thing. The guide is the little overlay that slides in from the left when you, well, previously double tapped on the Xbox guide button. Now it'll be a single tap.
So well named.
Yeah. So one of the things that they're doing here is they're killing off Snap. Like, apps will not support Snap anymore. You're not going to be able to tell your Xbox to snap things. Snap is gone with this upcoming release.
Yeah. And hey, sorry, developers. You know that thing we insisted you include in your application if we were going to accept it in the store initially? Yeah. Sorry. We're not going to use that anymore.
I don't remember if they insisted that for store inclusion initially. If they did, they got off of that requirement fairly quickly because all the apps that I want to have Snap support don't. So, so yeah, it hasn't been widely utilized by the app developers, and my guess is it's probably not widely used by the users either. Microsoft does everything based on metrics, and if people aren't using it, they're not going to keep supporting it. Now,
right.
I did use it sometimes for watching TV stuff while I was doing other things, and that was cool, but they do say that getting rid of Snap and these changes to the guide overlay will make things significantly faster. And people that have used the update have said, yes, it is definitely faster. So that's good. And then they've made another change that's really interesting, I think. And that is, if you go to the achievements section in the guide, you can now configure basically an achievements overlay. So there's that part of achievements where it'll give you progress bars on like how far along you are to getting an achievement. Like maybe it's collect 10 skulls, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. And you've collected 6 and the progress bar is 60% of the way filled in. You can now get a small overlay of that information to display on screen all the time. That's cool. But what's more cool is that it's configurable. You get to pick where on the screen it is. And it's also somewhat transparent. I love this idea. What I really want is to see this exact feature for video apps. I want to be able to open the HD Home Run app or the NHL app or CBS News and essentially have picture in picture. You remember picture in picture? It was this cool thing we had in like the 90s on all
right,
of my TVs.
Right.
And then it disappeared for some reason. I want that. I want to be able to watch a football game or a hockey game or whatever while I'm playing a game or doing whatever I want on my Xbox. I want to be able to configure where that little window is, and I want a volume mixer so that I can decide how much of the audio I'm getting from my game versus the video app. That's not here yet, but I'm hoping that these changes that they're making are heading us down that path and that that's what we'll get. Because that would be way better. And they're saying they're making all of this way better.
All right.
Okay. There's more to this still. They're making some changes to Cortana, which I don't know how many of you are actually using. I would love to know. On my primary Xbox, we still have Cortana disabled. I was hoping that they might make some changes to make that more useful for the simple things like turning it on and off and pausing things. They haven't, but they have added a couple of new features. You're going to be able to use Cortana on your Xbox to set alarms and reminders. It's kind of nice. I don't know how often I would actually use that on my Xbox, but you know, maybe you're playing something and your wife or your kid or somebody else says, hey, you don't have to do this right now, but can you, before you leave, take out the garbage? And you can just use Cortana to set a reminder without even getting up or pulling out your phone or anything like that. So that's kind of cool. What I think is the really, really interesting feature that I had no idea they were working on, though, is called Copilot. Now, this is cool, but it's not one that I'm sure I'll use, but it is really, really neat. So the idea here is that from within the Xbox, this is not game specific. You do this at the Xbox level. You can configure it so that you can make two controllers work as one controller. And by that, I mean, you might make it so that, you know, the left stick and the buttons on the left side of the stick of one controller work like normal, but you would use a second controller for the A, B, X, and Y buttons and the right stick or something like that. And there's a couple of interesting use cases here. So one could be you're a parent and you're playing with your small child who just can't get get used to working two thumbsticks to try to move around and look in all these different directions. Like, that's hard to get at first. The other one, though, is an even cooler use case, and that's for people with handicaps. You know, maybe you only have use of one hand, but you still want to be able to play games, and some people are able to use their feet for these types of things. So maybe you configure it to use your left foot on one controller and your right hand on one controller. And now you've got full control of everything. And it wasn't possible before. And now it is. And again, this is not game specific. You configure this in your Xbox. And every game will support it because every game is just going to see those two controllers as one controller with however you set it up. And I think that's really awesome.
That is cool. Now, I guess the one thing I'm curious about is, can you have all controls enabled on both controllers so that one could actually act as an override, like an actual co-pilot?
I think so. And I think that's kind of what they're thinking about with that first use case, with the parents kind of controlling some of the stuff for their kids. But I don't know, because I still don't have this update. But I want to try it. I want to put a controller in Eden's hand and give this a try and see how it would work out.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay, one more thing. This is audio related. We're getting a few more audio options and features on the Xbox One. We've talked about Dolby Atmos before. We specifically meant Dolby Atmos for home theater. It's coming in this release. They're also going to support Dolby Atmos for headphones. I didn't know that was a thing, but cool. I'll take all the Atmos I can get, right?
I still don't understand it.
Nope. I mean, it's got to be special headphones. Maybe it's not special headphones. I don't know. Maybe it's just really crazy advanced audio processing, but I would give it a try. And then another one, which I had never even heard of before, it's called Windows HRTF. And I couldn't even guess what HRTF meant. And then I looked it up and it's called head related transfer function. Well, that doesn't
help
what
me.
The heck this is either. It's basically that whole trick of like recording audio in such a way that with regular headphones, they can actually make it sound like this guy is behind you at like 6 o'clock, or he's in front of you and up to the left a little bit and stuff. And it's some of that really cool 3D spatial positioning stuff. I didn't know it had a name.
Cool. Kind of like binaural audio.
Yeah, exactly. It's that sort of stuff. And so games and apps that will support it can do this on the Xbox One with this next update. Okay,
cool.
That was all the Xbox stuff.
I am actually really excited about that. And of course, the irony of that is that I don't yet have Dolby Atmos, but I have the Dolby Atmos itch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got your 4K and your HDR. This year's got to be the year of Atmos.
Oh, 2017, the year of Atmos.
Make it happen, Richard. Make us proud. All right, let's move on to the Windows side of all of this, because there are some updates here also. If you've got the latest insider updates on Windows 10, you're going to be getting some things, including the Beam streaming. That's that sort of Twitch-like competitor that we've talked about in the past. Although that's not coming just yet. It sounds like it's not going to be this week, even though we thought it was going to be this week, but it ought to be real soon. They're also releasing the game mode stuff that we talked about previously. And we've got some more information on how that all works, a little bit more. Windows Central had a post where they spoke with some of the engineers from Microsoft, and what they said is that essentially when you enable game mode on a game, it prevents other system tasks from taking resources away from what your game is trying to do, especially CPU resources. So if something wants to spin up and do a bunch of work, like I think a really good example would probably be like Windows Defender wants to scan for viruses or something while you're right in the middle of a game. Well, game mode isn't going to let it consume a whole bunch of CPU. It doesn't sound like it's going to completely restrict it. Like it's still going to be able to use some CPU, but not as much as it normally would while you're gaming. They also filled us in to let us know that it's a configurable option per game. So maybe some games you don't want to turn this on. Maybe you do. It's completely up to you. You set it once for a game and you don't have to think about it again because it'll remember that setting for you. We also mentioned before that it'll support Windows 32 games, you know, like the games that you probably bought on Steam, and UWP games, you know, like the Xbox Play Anywhere titles and anything else that you're getting from the Windows Store. The UWP games, this isn't going to be surprising, guys. The UWP games will see a bigger improvement. I don't completely understand why, but they will. So that's maybe another benefit to buying games from the Windows Store. So all of that is coming, and it sounds like game mode is coming this week. Another thing coming, you know, I messed this up because there's like five posts here. Here's another feature that is coming to the Xbox One, and that is parental controls, where you can essentially say, all right, little Billy, he gets X number of hours per week, and all of that will now also count on the Xbox. So you've already, through Windows 10 Family Controls, been able to say that, you know, they can only spend, you know, 9 hours a week, I don't know, some number, on the PC web browsing. Now you can also set how much time they can spend gaming on an Xbox. So more parental controls is always a good thing. Give the power to the parents so that they can decide how much time their children are spending on computers and in front of TVs and all that stuff. That's really, really cool to see. I think that's all the updates. I can't wait to finally get to try some of these things. But you know, maybe by next show, I'll finally have some hands-on time with all of these. But probably not the Windows stuff, because I'm not running insider previews on my gaming PC. Okay, back to a little bit of gaming slash Xboxy stuff, because Microsoft announced two more Xbox One S bundles, because we needed more bundles. First one, Halo Wars 2. That game is right around the corner, guys. It's coming out in February, so they've bundled it up with the Xbox One. It'll only be available as a 1 terabyte version of the Xbox One S. It's the white version with a white controller, so you're not getting an Xbox that looks any different than any of the rest of the Xboxes out there. But it does come with Halo Wars 2 Ultimate Edition. That's the $80 version of the game, not the $60 version of the game. And you're basically getting it for free. It's a 1 terabyte console with the game for $350. That's the regular price of a 1 terabyte Xbox One S. So that's cool. The other bundle is a Forza Horizon 3 bundle. Like the other one, it's just the plain white Xbox One S, plain white controller. They're going to make it available in 500 gig and 1 terabyte offerings. It only comes with the regular version of Forza Horizon 3, and the pricing is going to be normal. $300 for the 500 gig option, $350 for the 1 terabyte. So you're just getting the regular version of the game for free, packed in as a digital download. Both of these are digital downloads, and both of these games are Xbox Play Anywhere. So if you buy these bundles, you get the digital version. You can also play them on your Windows 10 PC without having to buy them again. So that's always really nice to see. Since we're approaching the next month, that means that Microsoft has also announced what we can expect to get for free with Xbox Games with Gold. And there's some good ones in here, guys. Some games I really, really like. For the entire month of February on the Xbox One, you're going to get Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time. I love the title, and I love the game. It's a co-op 2D game where you're these adorable little aliens who are like from this planet of love, but something terrible happened, and you're trying to fix the universe. And so it's you and up to three friends flying around in this little spaceship, and there's guns on different sides of the spaceship, and someone has to pilot it to move it in the right directions, and someone has to control the shields and point those in the right directions. It's a lot of fun. It's a really fun co-op game, and you're getting it for free. For February 16th to March 15th, Project Cars. I love this game. I bought it on the Xbox One. I eventually sold it because I then bought it on PC. So I'm happy to have it on both of my gaming devices once February 16th rolls around. I love Project Cars. If you're into hardcore racing sims, you'll like Project Cars too. On the Xbox 360 side, for the first half of February, you get Monkey Island 2 Special Edition. Second half of February, Star Wars The Force Unleashed. This is one of the only Star Wars games where you play as the bad guy. You are an apprentice to Darth Vader in this game. And I never played it, but it looks kind of fun. And despite the fact that it's an Xbox 360 game, remember, these are backwards compatible. So download all four of these games if you have an Xbox One. There's no reason not to. If free is just too cheap for you, Richard, you just have to pay something. Well, there's also Deals with Gold. And this week, unlike the last couple of weeks, there's actually some decent games in this sale. First one, Battlefield 1. You know, one of the biggest games of the year last fall. It's down to $36. Titanfall 2, another awesome game from last fall. It's half off. It's only $30. And then Watch Dogs 2, another big one, marked down to $40. So lots of great deals and some awesome games coming for free. Okay, that's our gaming stuff.
Long gaming session. Jeez. All right, well, lots of good stuff going on there. Some not so happy stuff going on at Microsoft too, unfortunately. We know that they've had the expectations set for a bunch more layoffs this year, and the latest round of them hit with about 700 people and an unexpected name in that list.
Yeah, and the name might not be super familiar to people. His name is Brian Roper. But all we have to say is he's the Like a Boss guy, and everyone's going to know who we're talking about.
Now, see, I would not get that. I don't remember would that? Get it if you would say he's the hat guy.
He is the hat guy. He's normally wearing like a fedora or, you know, some crazy hat. He is by far, or I guess was, the most energetic presenter Microsoft has ever. Like, I would say he was more energetic than even Steve Ballmer. And Steve Ballmer was freaking nuts.
well, right. There's energetic and then there's freaking nuts.
Yeah. So he was good. You know, some people said that they thought that this meant that Microsoft has lost their best presenter. I like Brian Roper, but I don't think he's better than Joe Belfiore.
Yeah, I mean, they had different presentation styles. If anything, I think I would agree with you. I think that I personally believe that Joe is the best presenter that they have right now. But it's sad to see this happen. You know, it's hard to know what goes into staffing decisions like this. And when you have to cut people, you always end up having to get rid of people you don't want to have to get rid of. And this is just unfortunate. But he seems to be, from his tweets, taking it really well, and without any negative undertones. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And hopefully he and everybody else who got laid off will find new jobs and maybe even better jobs very, very soon. That's what we're hoping for all these guys.
Tech is hot. Unemployment on the coast is very low. I think there's a good chance of that.
Yeah, probably. So that's it for our news this week, Richard. What is going on in your entertainment center?
Well, I started running out of storage for my recorded TV and my backed up TV content. Like, I keep on just throwing this stuff on Drobo, and more lights keep on coming on telling me that I need to replace some drives. And on my one Drobo, I've reached max capacity. Not max available space, max capacity of the storage unit itself.
Oh, man.
So I need to start moving stuff around. So I ended up basically making the decision that some of the recorded TV files, like series that I've recorded in their entirety but never watched yet, I was going to kind of put somewhere else. So I moved them off to another server, and I still connect to that so that I can see them as available to watch whenever I want to watch recorded TV. But that took a little bit of time. And every once in a while, I have to do this. And I have to imagine I'm not the only person that deals with this problem occasionally of running out of storage and having to figure out, okay, where am I going to put stuff? And how's that going to work going forward? Meanwhile, I keep on adding to that storage because, as I alluded to before, I am both finishing recordings of series that I hadn't previously backed up in their entirety. So, as I've mentioned in the past, I have bought numerous TV series on DVD form, some on Blu-ray, and I try to back them up, but I usually lose steam. And while I have momentum, I figured, all right, let's keep going and let's get through the rest of the TV stuff that I had not yet backed up onto the server. And while I was doing that, I'm like, well, you know, the first two seasons that I did actually record, I recorded in a compressed format. So I'm just going to go with the full uncompressed files now. And so I've been re-recording some stuff that I had previously backed up, or re-backing up, I should say. And I'm just thrilled how easy it is for Plex to find it all. Like, one of the things that I hated about doing this, and one of the reasons why I lost Steam, was because you had to go find the metadata. You had to put it in the file. You had to name each file with the episode title if you wanted all of your different devices to be able to see the title of the episode, not just the episode number. Plex makes all of that go away. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
All you have to do is rip the titles, put the episode number in the title, and you're done. It's so, so easy. So I've been continuing that. I also went through the process of reinstalling a bunch of the stuff that I had not yet installed on the Xbox One after I switched to it, the Xbox One S, I should say. And, you know, I had a big, huge queue of stuff that was going to be loading. So I turned the box off and let it finish up. The next time I turned the box on, I turned it on because I wanted to watch a movie. So I turned the box on and I inserted the disc and hadn't recognized me yet. I thought that was kind of funny. So I logged in manually. By now, the movie has started. And as soon as I logged in, the flood of notifications just started coming. For like the first 10 minutes of the movie, I got a total of, I think, 30 notifications. And each one has the noise and the animation and the lower third. And oh my God, it was so annoying. I'm like, I get it. They all installed. Leave me alone.
So after like the first 2 minutes of this, you didn't pause the movie, go into settings and turn off notifications? Because that's an option. You can turn off notifications in video apps.
So I probably did not know that that was an option. I will now do that, but I wouldn't have done it at the time because that would also have been, that would have just been the deal breaker. That'd be like, okay, fine, we're not watching the movie now. So
yeah,
I just powered through it. All right. So I have been watching a lot of stuff. I started Justified Season 5 so I can keep up with the guys on Cord Cutters as they talk about that show. I have been keeping up with Nashville, which I am still enjoying. I'm not quite sure how I did this, but I binged on all of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Well, I know how I did it. We'll get to that a little bit later. But all of it. Two seasons, 13 episodes each season, half an hour each, not 23 minutes, half an hour each. So basically, I've watched 13 hours of The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. First season was awesome. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. Second season was okay. Finished in the last bit better than I thought that the whole season was, but a very entertaining show if you like Tina Fey comedy. Watched the three, I don't know if you call them episodes or mini movies or what, of Sherlock Season 4. Hadn't seen any of that previously, so watched all of that, and that went from really good to really weird in that order. Episode 1, really good. Episode 2, good. Episode 3, really weird. So that was a little frustrating. And then also watched The Secret Life of Pets, one of the Ultra HD movies that I had, and it was beautiful. Loved watching that. This week, so all of this, I've been watching a lot of content, and I've been distracted, and as a result of it, yes, I know, Home On isn't out yet. Now, I am totally and completely sucked into the news. Every single night, from like Saturday on, we have been watching an hour or two of political analysis shows.
Wow.
Every single night. And, you know, I lean left, so I typically watch CNN, but I've been surfing just to see what else is going on.
Yep.
I've been checking out CNBC, MSNBC, even been checking out Fox and OAN.
Wait,
which
what's
are
OAN?
One America News. It's a cable news station pretty far to the right.
Oh.
Every one of them. Every one of them is like, I don't know what to call it. It's, I equate it to a train wreck. I don't want to make any implications about the content matter by saying that, but it's one of those things where I can't not watch.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, this is a situation that we've never really seen before in this country, and the news media is eating it up. Like, they are in heaven.
Oh, right, yeah. Now. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just been fascinating to me. Absolutely fascinating. And I am not the kind of guy that watches the evening news.
No, you're not.
I am not the kind of guy that sits down and watches political analysis shows. So it has just sucked me in, because as most people can attribute, the last year and certainly the last 5 days have been nothing like this country has previously witnessed before.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting time. Just tonight, I was thinking, you know, I can't think of another time in my life where everybody is talking politics. Everyone.
Yeah.
No matter where you go, you get in a cab, the cabbie's talking politics with you. You go to work, people are talking politics. You go to church, people are like everywhere, people are talking about this. It's a very unique situation to be in. And as a political news junkie, I'm not sure that I'm actually happy about that.
Bunch of amateurs.
I don't necessarily want everybody's opinion on all of this stuff. So, interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely listening to my political podcast a lot more frequently than I used to. So I'm right there with you, but not watching as much TV coverage of it. Yeah. All right, so I guess that means it's my turn. I do have one little hardware thing. I believe it was last week when I said I was having some HDR weirdness with my Vizio TV and my Xbox One S, and that I had heard that if you bought a certified premium HDMI cable, that that would fix some of those problems, and that I had bought one of those cables, but that I lost it. Well, like the day after we recorded that episode, I found the cable.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. I plugged it in, made sure HDR was enabled on the TV, and it made no difference. I still had the same weird green bar on the left with white snow sometimes and screen blackouts sometimes and all that stuff. So I turned off HDR for basically the sanity of the rest of my family. And I'll turn it on when I want it on, but until there's another update from either Vizio or Microsoft, I'm probably not going to be enabling that anytime soon.
Has Vizio acknowledged the problem?
Oh, yeah. Yes, they have. And they've been good about getting out new firmware updates for this TV. So I'm sure it'll come, but the ball really is in both Microsoft and Vizio's court, because Microsoft is doing weird stuff with HDR on the Xbox One, which we talked about a little bit last week.
So yeah. I didn't remember if you had said last week if Vizio was aware of this or not. Okay, cool.
Yep. Yeah. And then in terms of things that I've been watching, I finished up The Good Place. I didn't realize that it had finished last week. I was playing video games with some friends over the weekend, and one of them said, "Hey, anybody watching The Good Place?" And I said, "Yeah, I love that show." And he said, "Did you watch the last two episodes?" And I said, "Well, two episodes? No. And what do you mean last?" And he said, "Yeah, the season's over." I'm like, "What do you mean it's over? They came back from a fairly lengthy winter break to finish the season with four episodes?"
That's weird.
It's very weird. So I watched the last couple of episodes, and it was good. It did not end the way I expected at all. So if you want to chat the ending of The Good Place, feel free to DM me on Twitter or whatever. It was interesting, and I think I liked it. We'll see. I still don't think it's been renewed for season two yet.
Mm.
I, but I'm hoping it will be. Because I did really, really like that show.
Cool. Josh, do you get Showtime?
No. What I've done in the past is I've just signed up for Showtime through Amazon to just get the streaming service so that I could watch Homeland.
Got it. Okay. Because I didn't know if you knew now that I talked about watching the sneak of Homeland in the break that we had had, but we actually now have the full season going. We're now up to episode 2 in the season. So
I think I still might wait until the season is done and then sign up and binge it all.
And that makes sense if that's how you typically do it. I just didn't remember if you got this channel or if you did what you do.
I do what I do, Richard. And it's all that I do. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. If you want to get a hold of us, send us some messages like Don and John did for this week. You can do that via email. It's entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. If you want a slightly faster response, you can find us on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. We're not creative at all when it comes to our Twitter handles.
We are creative in our tweeting, though. I mean, come on, give us some credit.
Just not in the handles, because we want to make it easy to find us. The website has its own Twitter feed. When it becomes sentient, then I'll be worried. But it's not yet. If you want to follow it, it's at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/thedmz. Richard, you mentioned a few minutes ago something called Home On. What's that?
I don't want to talk about it. No, I have been so distracted with so many things, not just television. So my attempt to get this out was thwarted by me, I guess I should say. So coming soon, our CES interviews with some post discussion with Josh. It's a good show. You will enjoy it. Just, you know.
You will.
Don't sit there next to the feed waiting for it to show up. It'll be there.
You know, the delay is actually intentional. Here's what I think actually happened. Is we got back from CES and we were burned out on CES. But more importantly, we knew that you, the listener, were a little bit burned out on CES news. So we took a break. We let everybody calm down, relax, focus on far less crazy things like what's going on in Washington, D.C. And then we're going to hit you with the CES news that maybe you missed. That must be what you were actually going for, right? This is all calculated and planned.
Sure. We'll go with that alternative explanation.
Sure. I like that. So if you like these shows, you can find them on iTunes, Pocket Cast, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. Pretty much everywhere you can find podcasts. Subscribe. You should definitely subscribe, because you never know when that episode of Home On is going to come out. And if you subscribe, you'll get it right when it does. And then if you like the shows, the way that you can tell us that is by telling other people that. And you do that by going over to iTunes, leave a rating, leave a review. It helps us out a ton. And we really, really appreciate everybody who can head on over to iTunes and do that for us. Then if you want to talk to us in real time, like while we're recording the show, you can do that too. You can be a part of the recording of Entertainment 2.0 by coming to the website when we record it. We've got a live stream, we've got a live chat, and it's all super simple and super fun. We normally do this Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Sometimes life is hard though, guys. So follow us on Twitter. We always tweet when the show is going to be. It wasn't Tuesday this week. I don't know. I don't have any idea what's happening next week. So follow us on Twitter at Josh Pollard, at Richard Gunther, at DigiMediaZone, and you'll know for sure when we're recording live. And hopefully we will see you next week, because that's going to do it for episode 395. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther, and we'll be back next time for episode 396. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.